from the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. Mother's Day weekend, man. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. Moms to be, moms who were, moms who want to be, or just stepmoms, whatever. We all came from somewhere, and it's moms. And I want to wish my mom a very happy Mother's Day. One woman right there who was not afraid of the outdoors. She could, you know, bait a hook, take the fish off, hunt deer. You name it. She would hunt squirrel, rabbit, all of that stuff. Ice fish with us and everything, man. And just amazing a role model to have, in the outdoors, along with my dad too. But this is Mother's Day. Father's Day is coming up next month. We'll get to my dad, but, you know, and now, with age, even though she's really not that old, she is, been, you know, dealing with dementia and Alzheimer's. That's very difficult. More difficult for me than it is for her. So, happy Mother's Day, Mom. And thanks for all the great stuff you do. And still probably could fillet a fish better than I ever could, because I cannot do that for whatever reason. You can show me a million times, I still can't get the filleting down correctly. So, I'm going to have to find somebody else to do it for me. Want to thank our good friends at Conquest Sense for being a part of this show. Just had a conversation with Doug Roberts yesterday. We're going to have him back on. Also, our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. A lot of big things coming from Not Just Guns, that small store right in Mason. They have their auctions coming up once a month. They have lots of great classes in the center right next door. And I cannot say enough nice things about Mike Green and his staff at Not Just Guns, and not because they're sponsors, because they are true and they want to help you find what you need for, you know, hunting or for in-home protection or everyday carry, whatever the case. Notjustguns.com is where you need to go. And anywhere you're listening to this show via podcast or our affiliates, you can shop on both of the websites, for Conquest Sense and for Not Just Guns, via our website, which is wildmichiganradio.com. Now, you wonder sometimes what makes someone tick, pardon the pun, but what makes somebody want to delve themselves into the world of entomology so much that ticks are your focus. Now, it is Tick Awareness Month this May. Brian Anderson, the Tick Terminator, is back with us. He was with us here last month, but now we're kicking off Tick Awareness Month. Lyme disease, a very nasty thing. But Brian, my first question to you, sir, aside from welcoming you, is saying, why? Why the tick?
I don't even know myself sometimes. A weird fascination, I guess. You know, it started when I was a little kid, watching my grandpa take him off the dog the size of a dime. You know what I mean? Big, ugly, fat, gray, disgusting. I don't know if my brothers did the hammer test, you know, where you take a hammer and you can imagine what the hammer would do on a tick like that.
Oh, yeah.
It was crazy, you know what I mean? And now here I'm an adult and still interested in them, you know. Crazy
adult, but let's not say we're grown up, because that,
you know, I don't want to grow up.
That has eluded me for all of my 55 years, which I'm very happy to say. But but seriously, there's a fascination that has become what has turned you into the top tick speaker and educator in the country. I mean, you're the tick man, the tick magnet, if you will.
The tick terminator. I hate them all. I want to kill them all, you know, but I can't. So we kind of learn how do we live with them, you know, and that's pretty much what I do. You know, I'm all about prevention.
This month is
Lyme Awareness Month is really what the key of the month is. Lyme awareness.
Now, go into what Lyme disease can do, because it can be very long term and really make your life a living hell.
Oh, it's awful. I mean, it can just wreak havoc on you. I mean, in the beginning, it can be achy joints, flu-like symptoms, just feeling crappy. It can give you kind of like a Bell's palsy where you half your face is hanging. You can have brain fog where you're just not with it. I mean, you know, you may be driving in your mind. You may not even sure, okay, where am I going now? You know, just weird neurological things. Your eyes can go blurry. There's so many different things. I mean, they also call it the great imitator because it can act like fibromyalgia, it can act like multiple sclerosis. And, you know, it's very hard sometimes for doctors to detect and diagnose and treat, especially. That's why I'm all about preventing it in the beginning, you know, is so important. But it is a miserable disease. People have actually even died from the complications of it. It's not real common, but it's happened. But it is, can just be devastating to people. I mean, just suck the energy right out of them and just miserable their life. I've written a couple of bulletins that I send out to safety directors and actually, you know, people who buy stuff from me. A year ago, it was called the Tick Prevention Safety Guide. This year, I came out with a one called The Hidden Cost of Lyme Disease.
Ah.
All right.
Brian Anderson is our guest. Brian, right there, that tells me that you're going to want to put your ear close to the radio because an ounce of prevention is probably going to be worth thousands of dollars worth of cure.
Absolutely. I mean, the hidden cost that we don't think about when people get Lyme disease. I mean, something like, what is the cost of losing your dream? Let's say you're a high school. I've heard these are stories. I heard a high school student that got it when he was like 18 or 19 years old, right? And he had it for several years. It was so bad, he couldn't even go to college. He couldn't go to college to pursue his dream, okay? Let's say it's a father that gets it and he's working on a job and he becomes so sick with it, so knocked down physically that he can't even go to his kids' soccer games or baseball games or football games because he's in bed. How do you put a price on that? You know what I mean? Just playing with your kids, losing jobs, financial security, credit scores, you know, just suffering. You know, it even ends marriages sometimes, too, because they're so frustrated with how we handle this. Those are some of the hidden costs we don't think about.
That's incredible. Brian Anderson is joining us here. The Tick Terminator, his website is Lyme, L-Y-M-E, tickbughub.com. Again, we got a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, to that. We've kept the link up there because it's that time of year. Believe it or not, we are jumping right from winter into summer. And Brian, a couple of minutes here. This is where ticks really get their jumping off point.
Absolutely, yeah. I think Lyme may be the Lyme Awareness Month because ticks have been coming out now for a little bit, and people, let's say they, you know, the last several weeks now in April and sometimes in March, and now they're probably starting to go to the doctor with some symptoms, okay, because they've gotten bit already. And it's also, I think, it may be Lyme Awareness Month because of the fact that it's kind of kicking off the season to be aware, to be conscious of ticks, being prevented, taking preventative measures so you don't get bit, or how you get bit, how do you take them off, and stuff like that, too. So those are probably some of the reasons that Lyme, that may happen to be Lyme Awareness Month because it's beginnings of people getting, you know, diagnosed with it and it's kicking off the season for it.
Now, Brian Anderson is our guest here. Lyme Tick Bug Hub is his website, LymeTickBugHub.com. Brian, hang on because I want to talk to you. We're going to talk more about how this can happen. So take into consideration, we've got turkey season full on. The morels are going to be popping up everywhere. We're going to start getting out, doing some fishing, maybe some shore fishing and some tall grass. So just a few things to think about that your favorite recreation places are the places they like to hide and become part of your favorite day. So we're going to talk more. We're going to talk more with Brian here in a couple of minutes. We're going to find out more about Lyme Awareness Month and how you can prevent very easily and cost effectively becoming a tick magnet yourself, like my good friend Russ Bartel. It's Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Whoa, whoa.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an hour to time. In a state 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, all over the world via our website and podcast, MichiganRadio.com. So happy to have you here, man. It's a full-on May. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there of every kind. We appreciate you, and without you, we would not be here. And we thank you for that. Thank our friends also at Not Just Guns and Conquest Scents. Conquest, makers of VS1 and Evercalm Scents in a Stick, plus a huge line of other great products as well. Find them online via our website, wildmichiganradio.com, as where you can find a link to the Tick Terminator, Brian Anderson, talking about Lyme Awareness Month, which is May. And Brian, we are going to be getting out. We're already out turkey hunting. The morels are going to be up popping everywhere. And people are, we're going to go all willy-nilly out into the woods, but we need to be protected. And you have a great way to do so, because it does not affect or alert the olfactory systems of deer, bear, predators, things of that nature, the things that we enjoy hunting, but take great care to hide our scent, but we want to be protected as well.
Absolutely, yeah. It's odorless when it's dry. Permethrin is the stuff to use. There is nothing better to keep ticks off you than permethrin. Nothing on the market, unless you stay inside, but we can't do that. So that's, guys, whether they're working on the food plots or scouting, you know, or whatever, now is the time to be preparing out there. That is for sure. Permethrin, the way it works is kind of cool. It's called a contact repellent. It's unlike DEET. And now DEET works by the scent, the smell, the aroma. When mosquito comes close to you, they smell it and they turn around and go back, because to them, it tells them there's no blood there. So then they fly off. Now, permethrin works differently. They don't notice till they come in contact with it. Ticks will get on like at our shoes and socks and pants and start crawling up. But then if it's treated with permethrin, that means if it's sprayed on there with a spray bottle, every step they take feels like an electric grid to them. It drives their nervous system nuts. And you can even see videos on YouTube about, you know, ticks falling off and dropping and just being very uncomfortable every step they take. And eventually we'll repel them, and eventually we'll even kill them too. So it doesn't bother us at all. So it's wonderful stuff. But the thing I like the most about it is that I can treat my clothes for weeks and weeks and sometimes months at a time if I want to, and they'll still stay on my clothes, even through the laundry, for several months if I want to. You don't have to keep reapplying it like you do with DEET, but DEET is wonderful for skin, permethrin for the clothes, and gear.
All right. So it's great. Brian Anderson is our guest here. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask about the chemical breakdown as to how resistant it is to, whatever the detergents and things of that nature that we use every day. I don't know what, if it's very expensive, cost effective wise. I mean, look, anything to protect yourself is cost effective, in my opinion. But if we want to get multiple uses out of it, do we have to spray and then wash and then spray and then wash? But apparently it'll last a few washes.
Oh, yeah. This can last. On my website, theTickTerminator.com, we work with the only concentrate where you, the customer, can decide, okay, how long do I want to last? So I mix in a little bit, it'll last for a couple of weeks. I mix in a lot, and it can last for 24 weeks and 24 washes. That's basically 6 months. So people could do their hunting clothes at the beginning of hunting season, or at the beginning of scouting season, you know, working on food plots or whatever for the summer, and be done with it one time. I treat my outdoor clothes with it for like 3 months at a crack.
Oh, that's amazing.
For the heck of it, you know? And it stays effective that whole time. So it's the only one on the market that does that. Otherwise, they're good for 6 weeks, six washes. Mm-hmm. And ours can be good for what you decide how long you're going to last. So people like control, hey, You know,
I like control.
That's how it is. You know?
I never have any, but I like control. No, and Brian Anderson is our guest here. There's a link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, right to the Tick Terminator. We talked about the costs and the physical effects, but look, I know that there's small. And they can move, covers a pretty fair amount of ground, but they have to have other vectors that really kind of get them around, even like closer to our homes and stuff.
You mean the ticks are?
The
yeah.
ticks, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They can be in our yards. It's best to keep your grass cut low. They like leaf litter, like around wood piles. If you have a swing set in the yard, let's say if you're in a real rural area, you have a lot of deer around there, keeping a swing set in a sunny area is less like, because ticks don't like a lot of sun. They like some kind of protection, you know, from leaf litter, shade, stuff like that. They're going to be more in that area if they can. So, I mean, even on my website, I have places there about, you know, how to try to tick-proof your yard. You can even make a little boundary around the outside of like 3 feet of wood chips or gravel, because they have a hard time, you know, navigating that. So, yeah, definitely. But
now, a few years ago, speaking of Brian Anderson here on Wild Michigan, Brian, I had talked to a company that had manufactured or put together a kit to keep ticks away from your house, which included some permethrin-treated cotton and some cardboard tubes that looked like little toilet paper tubes. And they relied on mice to take the cotton out and build nests with that, and because they say that the ticks and mice kind of go hand-in-hand for travel.
Absolutely. Usually when ticks are born, a female gives birth to anywhere between 1,000 to 5,000 at a time. I wish it wasn't so many, but they do. And after a couple weeks, they hatch out of their eggs, all right? And they're microscopic. So they're on the forest floor. Now, they're not born with any tick-borne diseases, but what happens is then they look for their first host, which to them, when they're that small, it's going to be a white-footed mouse, mostly in our area. So they get on that white foot of mouse because it's close to the ground, and they can't get on us because we're too big. But they get on a white foot of mouse, and they start sucking the blood out of the white foot of mouse. Now, the theory behind that, what you were just describing, is called a tick tube,
yes.
Or basically a toilet paper roll with stuffed cotton balls that were treated with permethrin, okay? So the theory is that the white-footed mice at nighttime, because they're pretty nocturnal, they're going around the yard and they see this. They grab that stuff for stuffing. They grab the cotton balls for stuffing, bring it down into their nest, okay? And then after a couple days, when the ticks drop off of the white-footed mice, they land in that permethrin-treated cotton balls and they die. So that's the theory behind how that's supposed to work. I've actually made those up. I make them up every year for my moms and put them at her house. So I save, you know, toilet paper rolls and just spray some cotton balls. I do it myself, but you can buy them like that already done too.
Absolutely amazing.
That's the theory behind it.
That's amazing.
So who would have thought that?
Well, right. Well, you know what? Somebody is out there smarter than me, and that's why we have you on the show. Brian Anderson, we really appreciate your expertise and your knowledge about ticks. And keep up the good fight, my good man. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you.
So glad to have you here on the show. LimeTickBugHub.com, or real simple, push the button on WildMichiganRadio.com.
Hi, this is Cuz Strickland with Mossy Oak, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez.
It sits above the mantle on a couple rusty nails, and it's worth a bunch of money, but it damn sure ain't for sale. The good Lord only knows all the stories it could tell, granddaddy's gone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. And if you miss any of this show at any given time via our affiliates, you can always go to our website for the podcast. Absolutely free, 24/7. WildMichiganRadio.com is where you go to pick that up. And it's being brought to you by our friends at Not Just Guns. Also, Conquest Sense. And if you're listening anywhere in the world, you can order directly from them via our website as well. Thanks to Brian Anderson, the Tick Terminator, for sharing his wealth of information regarding ticks and how to avoid them. And, of course, places well known for ticks are the upper Midwest, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, where our good friend Brian Brosdahl is. That is, of course, in Minnesota if it ever thaws. Which, from what I understand, Bro was out ice fishing last week. Bro, how are you, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. I was on the ice 3 days ago, and it's amazing. I mean, normally we would be, you know, chasing down some big slab crappies, but now the ice is mushy, so you can't really get out there. But 3 days ago, we had 22 inches of ice. On some of the lakes, and it was getting hard to get to, but this ain't normal. I mean, this winter was, like we were saying off the air, it wasn't one winter, it was multiple winters hitting us in a row. And actually went out and caught some perch and a few walleyes and smallmouth bass through the ice, and it's been really good. Yesterday I went sturgeon fishing.
Really?
Because I can't quite get to my... Yeah! Can't quite get to my panfish spots just yet, and they're ice covered. But we've got high 60s, and it's going to get into the 70s. So our ice has numbered days. It's going to go away.
Well, eventually, believe it or not, eventually you guys will thaw out there, and maybe just in time to get the boat out a couple of times before it starts snowing again. But you know,
exactly.
And I know guys right now, my friend Norm Smith is probably dying hearing this right now because he is such an avid ice angler. He's a tight liner and just he loves ice fishing. I have nothing against it. I love it. But I mean, for guys like you and Norm, this is your bread and butter time for the most part during the winter time. But you know, we have open water over here because we sit a little bit lower on the line, closer to the equator than you do. We have open water, but still, we're not getting all of the green weeds in yet. We're still dealing with some cold water temperatures, and that's going to make for a great ice out pan fishing.
Absolutely. Even the later winters, those really take their toll on the surviving weeds. Normally, we have a few strands left. And big panfish are magnetized towards weeds. If you find weeds at all, that's a great start to finding big crappies, big bluegills, and jumbo perch. They need vegetation. And if you can't find it, in some places, rock structures will be really good as you get to the northern part of Michigan, or even wood. Anytime beavers, you know, they're beaver chew and beaver dams always have fish around them. But if there isn't any of that, any kind of weed strands that are still left, and there should be some starting because it doesn't take long with that sun hitting that muddy bottom in the north parts of the bays of the lakes that'll get the weeds growing. And insect life will start getting real active. As soon as the sun's beating down, you don't need 50, 60, 70 degree water. Little midges start getting active, coming out of the bottom, and big slab bluegills will be in there. And the key is it's simple. They're like a light switch, just finding the warmest temperature in the lake, or, you know, like we were saying, finding vegetation. And if you have both, you have something else. And they're going to be shallow, but they're also going to be just, you know, as deep so that they're not vulnerable for attack, you know, anything. So if you can find warm water, 3 or 4 feet, sometimes some lakes are clear. So they're going to be 8, 10 feet. You know, that's a good place to look. And then boat harbors, you know, as long as you can get there by boat, you can fish there. It's a waterway. But boat harbors, creeks, creek mouths, channels, any kind of channel. So really scan and look at your Lake Master maps. If you got a Helix, you know, that comes with a built-in map, a Hummingbird Helix, you can see these spots. Even using satellite imagery, I use all the time, you know, if you can have some kind of Google Earth or something, you can look, and satellite photography reveals a lot of stuff in a lake. When lakes are really dark, you don't see as much, but you still see some stuff, little humps and islands or little contour changes, and there's a lot of technology there for us. And, of course, like you and I do all the time, drop a camera, what you see is what's there, you know.
Exactly.
And you know, it makes a big difference. And what I like to do is take an aqua view, and you see guys doing it, but put it on a painter's pole that you can extend, and then you can hold it down there, just go real slow, and you just turn it, just prop it against something, maybe a cleat on the boat, or hold it somewhere, and just kind of cruise real slow. You could just use the cord on the AquaView, but I like to use a painter's pole and attach it. And how do you attach it? Well, if you know, they make attachments, but in my world, I do anything I can. I have a lot of stuff that's taped or strapped on, but and just go along. But this is a magical time of year, and like I was saying earlier with the midges, that's why I use like firefly jigs. They have little feather hackles on them, and load up on some waxworms, bee moth, even maggots still work. Spikes work really good. Small minnows, even if you get little tiny shiners, you know, a bait shop, and they have emeralds. Sometimes they get some little ones that get mixed in. Those are gold. You know, you don't need a lot of them because you catch multiple fish out of them. But little tube jigs and work the areas, and you still got to fish. You know, if you're in darker water, you got to fish your way through sometimes. But I use side imaging, and now this year I'm going to use forward viewing. Technology is on a conveyor belt, and it's amazing what we have now. And even on Detroit River, when I fish tournaments there, you know, you're either hand lining or you're drifting with the current. Now they're pitching, and, you know, that's almost 4 mile-an-hour current sometimes, and they're finding little pockets and pitching 3/8-ounce jigs to them because they can see them forward viewing. And forward viewing is just a transducer that's pointing forward, and
right.
Most companies have them. I use a Hummingbird, and I'm going to have it on my London. I'm going to be pointing it around, and you'll see a fish. It's not like a photo of a fish. It's more like you'll see the shape of the fish, kind of a blob sitting there, and you got to really be accurate with your cast and drop it in. You'll see your bait and swim your bait over to it. And when the fish goes up and you see it move, you better watch your rod tip because he's on your line. But panfish really show up well on megasite imaging. They look like panfish, and you can even tell the crappies from the bluegills. But if you don't have all that, don't fret. You know, if you don't have a camera, if you don't have any of that stuff, temperature is your friend. You got to have a temperature gauge, and most sonars have it.
Yeah, temperature, when it comes to this time of year, I mean, look, we're dealing with colder water, so the fish aren't going to be as active, but yet they're coming out of the really cold water that they've experienced throughout the course of this winter. And then believe me, we've had some cold water temperatures with some good ice. So, you know, they're going to be putting on the feed bag. And like you say, bro, and we say this every year, bigger is not always better in the spring. Small is still good. Hell, small is good throughout the course of the year. But right now, at this time where things are just coming around, smaller lures, you know, tipped with waxies, with spikes or mousies or something of that nature, will do just fine. We're going to talk more with you here in a couple of minutes, find out what's going on with bluegill and perch and crappie. I mean, you know, just jigging is not a bad thing. You don't have to get all active and go Bill Dance out there. So hang on. We're going to talk more about the bro method of ice out panfish here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
Hey, Michiganiacs, this is your blood brother Ted Nugent celebrating the almighty Michigan spirit of the wild with my blood brother Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan. Go Wild!
Well, Welcome back to Wild Michigan. It is very happy to have you here. I had a conversation with our good friend, Doug Roberts, the deer professor, yesterday. He was going to be on with us today, but he will be on next week as we talk about what's going on. Of course, you know, we've got the birthing season coming up for our white-tailed does, and I know I look out my backyard and I see one out there, and she's got twins, if not triplets, and to see that already thus far is so much fun to watch the deer, man. And come the time, you know, the season, the fall season when we go out and hunt, I think makes me appreciate them that much more, just being able to observe. Turkey season going on right now. We've got the walleye been running great in the Detroit River, Lake Erie absolutely on fire right now. Saginaw Bay doing well. So, I mean, it's really hard to talk about things when things are going great. But let's go a little more inland right now. We're talking a bit about ice out pan fishing with our good friend Brian Brosdahl. Bro has been with us for 15 years. As long as we've been doing the show, Brian has been sharing what he has learned his whole life with us. And bro, I got to say, it's priceless to me to have you as a friend, but as a teacher as well, because, look, just about anybody can go out and find panfish. I mean, bluegills, one of the easiest fish to catch, but to find quality and to find quantity sometimes takes a little more, and this is what you've done and I would say perfected throughout your course of your career.
Well, when I first started guiding, you know, there's a lot of competition, and it was a different world back then, and you had to be good at everything, and you know, there's no just bumping your way into being the walleye pro. You had to take any trips you can, and I love fish, panfish. That's my number one. And everybody likes eating walleye or perch or whatever and stuff, but if I can catch a big bluegill or a big slab crappie, and jumbo perch are a blast, and they're another big thing you can get into right now, but I learned that way, and I just want people to catch fish. And being a guide for almost, it's only 30 years and a couple here, but I want to make sure everybody has the best experience on the water, and if you get out there and if you got kids or if you just want to have a good time, want you to catch fish. And there's some things with panfish. In the spring, ice out panfish are not spawning. That's a misconception. They come in to feed. That's why ice out, and even if your ice has been out for a week or two or even 3 weeks, a month, it doesn't matter. That's right in that time period when the fish are just gorging. And, you know, barometric pressures are the reset button and they change things, but for the most part, you can make a bite, get out there and explore the lakes. And, you know, do a little research. Don't go to a lake if you've never been there before. Don't go to a lake that doesn't have them. You got to really find out if they're in there. And, you know, if the bait shops will be a good resource. If not, just look it up online. And the panfish are going to be where, you know, the warmest water is, where there's mud. They're not going to be on humps or structures. Sometimes they do in the North Country, you know, to the northern Michigan, the UP, and northern Minnesota. You know, rocky areas up there, they will hold to that because there's nothing else, and they'll be on those edges, but for the most part, they're going to be in the warm water, and I just love it this time of year. When that water gets in the 40s, I'll target perch because bluegills and crappies can be kind of tough, but if you ain't finding them, go deep.
Mm-hmm.
They'll retreat back to the deeper water if there is no vegetation, if the temperatures get cold, and look for them with your graph. What you see is what you get. You can find them. But sometimes they'll hug the bottom, so you'll miss them. But with side imaging, I see them. You know, you see little circles around. But for the most part, if you're not getting them in the shallows, they're back in the deeper water, so get back there. You know, the thing is they're always somewhere in these areas, and they're going to be close to the spring spots. They don't go way to another part of the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a river system coming in, they're going to be on the edge. But if you don't find crappies and bluegills, go get some of the big jumbo perch. Jumbo perch spawn after ice out. And so when the water temperature hits 50, they're pretty much done spawning. The big females will dump deeper, but the males will linger. And so you could get a bunch of those. They're a little skinnier and smaller of the perch, but they have more meat anyway. The females are just full of eggs. And the biggest and the best perch fishing is right now for anywhere. So if you're not finding bluegills, crappies, go get the big jumbo perch in some of the lakes in Michigan have some giant perch, and so there's a lot of opportunity there, and they're great eating fish. It's just colorful, a lot of fun, and they like waxworms on jigs, tubes, firefly jigs, and then also, you know, just the same stuff you'd use for bluegills, minnows, fantastic, and so, you know, get some bait, load up on some minnows and waxies at the bait shop, and if none of that's available, just a little impulse mini smelt tails. They look like a little minnow. Use that on a bright colored jig head. Don't put your ice fishing stuff away, because small lures are work really well. Most of these fish feed on insect life, and your little tungsten jigs, like a mud bug, gill getter, those type of things work really well in the spring. And as summer begins, they'll eat larger baits, but mm-hmm. Micro bright colored baits, and bluegills, crappies have binocular vision. They can see micro particles, stuff that we can't see. They can see clear as a bell. So thinner line, 3-4, no more than 6 pound test. If you know, I like using panfish rods that St. Croix makes. They're fun. They're light. They have some great panfish rod series. And, you know, it's all about not using a broomstick, a pool cue to catch a smaller fish, you know, and so go light and use ultralight. You might catch a bass or something by accident, and there's a lot of fun catching big fish on light tackle, but you'll get more bites with thinner line. I sometimes use 3 or 4 pound test, and if there's a lot of little hammer handle pike or snags, then I'll bump it up to no more than 6, mm-hmm. And then go after it, and you catch more fish.
Brian Brosnahl is our guest here on Wild Michigan Bro. You know, I think, honestly, we probably spend more time on panfish talk here than any other show that I can think of. And you know, nobody's ever asked me why, which is fine. I mean, you can ask me if you'd like, but I think because that is one fish or one type of fish that has a more broad appeal, is more cost-effective to fish, is one of the best eating groups of fish. So, yeah, that's why I think we cover it that much, because there is so much to talk about in you know, what we've learned. And with technology changing all of the time, look, there's not a year gone by that we have not talked about something different, be it side imaging, front imaging, AquaView cameras, or any other bit of equipment that we use. And it all comes back to these basics of panfishing.
Oh, absolutely. And people rig a kayak with, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 worth of electronics, and all that. It's just crazy. You know, there's avids in every walk. But I can go to a big show in Vegas or Florida to work a booth for a sponsor, and I'll see Kevin Van Dam, and he's got bluegill photos to show me. Panfish is a huge thing, and it doesn't matter who it is. It could be a pro walleye guy. It could be a pro bass guy. And I see them, and they just can't wait to show me the bluegills that they found or the big slab crappies. I think crappies, to be honest with you, because everybody fishes crappies in the nation, are probably one of the most sought-after fish. Well, catfish are too, but in our world, we have more crappies. There's mm-hmm. few cats, but crappies and bluegills. But bluegills can be tough sometimes. They're hard to get, but crappies, just staying persistent and staying on them, you know, soaking a minnow on a light Aberdeen gamma catsu hook, or using this, you know, like we were saying, tubes or feather jigs. Then feather jigs sometimes just outfish everything there is. Mm-hmm. Pink and white is a color that the tournament pros use. I always have it tied on first. There's something about that for crappies. Works well for walleyes, but everybody loves them. Even nationally, I wouldn't doubt if crappies are one of the biggest things there are. And they are kind of they're becoming a glamour fish with the crappie tournaments down south. They're just, sure. You know, in our neck of the woods, they don't grow as fast. You know, we get a 12, 14 incher up here in Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, anywhere, even up in New York. They take a while to grow. They take maybe 8 to 10 years, and down there they get to that size in 2 to 3. So they got a faster turnaround on their panfish there. And but you know, that's the one thing we have in Michigan and right. Minnesota. We have big jumbo perch, and there's a lot of lakes that have all of it. They're well-rounded lakes, and there's so many bodies of water and you know, that's the thing about Michigan is you got so much water thousands and thousands of lakes, rivers, creeks, and it's time to go get the big panfish.
Absolutely. Brian Brosnahl, our guest, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you as always, man. Thanks to our friends at Not Just Guns and Conquest Sense being a part of this show. Happy Mother's Day, everybody out there. Enjoy yourself. Be wary of those little ticks and find us online, wildmichiganradio.com. Pick up the podcast absolutely free and find our fine sponsors and our great guests there as well. More coming your way on the Michigan Talk Network.